no slouch.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the, well, it is the Transportation Conference Committee, but it's really Transportation, Labor, and Housing Combined Conference Committee. Welcome, my name is Frank Hornstein. I'm the chair of the House Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee. And I will be, I'll have the gavel today. We'll, at the end of the meeting, we'll lay out kind of the plan that Chair Dibble and I have discussed for future meetings as we move through these three very important areas. Before we get started, however, we have so many people and new faces, staffers and members that may not know one another, so I'd like to start with introductions, and maybe we can start here at the end and then work our way around and then to the middle. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Laura Pater. I'm a nonpartisan analyst for the Senate Housing Committee.
I'm Warren Limmer, state senator from western Hennepin County.
Eric Olson, Senate fiscal analyst for the Labor Committee.
Carlin Doyle Fontaine, Senate counsel for the Labor Committee.
Beth Ethier, the Transpo CA in the Senate.
Tim Greenfield, nonpartisan counsel for the Senate Transportation Committee.
Good afternoon, Chair. Thank you very much. And I'm Scott Dibble, co-chairing this committee with you, and it's my great honor.
Thank you. Frank Hornstein.
Matt Bauman, committee administrator for the House Transportation Committee.
Matt Burris with nonpartisan House research covering transportation.
Andrew Lee, House fiscal staff.
Michael Nelson, representative, chair of the Labor Committee.
Mike Howard, chair of the House Housing Committee.
Representative John Petersburg, Transportation Committee, and after introductions, I have one question.
Helen Roberts.
That's right.
Helen Roberts, I'm the House Fiscal Analyst for the Labor Committee.
Molly Peterson, House DFL Research.
Marta James from House Research to cover labor issues.
Justin Cope, Legislative Analyst with the House Research Department on Housing, Finance, and Policy.
Katrina Heimark, House Fiscal Analyst for the Housing Committee.
Joel Marble, GOP House Research for Transportation.
Lori Cousineau, House Researcher for the GOP for the Labor Committee.
Danny Gillis, Senate DFL Research for the Labor Committee.
Dave Frazier, Senate Republican Research, Transportation and Labor.
Andy Larson, Senate Republican Research, Housing.
Dan Mueller, Senate Fiscal Analyst for the Housing Committee.
Alex Will, Legislative Assistant for Senator Dibble.
Okay, so we have, is everyone at the table finished, done introduction?
Oh, yes.
Fashionably late, Mr. Chair. Krista Boyd, Fiscal Analyst for the Senate Transportation Committee.
Thank you. And then we have a couple of members joining us online. They could also introduce themselves.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Senator Lindsey Port, the chair of the Housing Committee in the Senate.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Senator Jen McEwen, chair of the Senate Labor Committee, and I'm appearing remotely today from Duluth.
Thank you. Welcome. And is anyone not? Oh, Senator Morrison.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Senator Kelly Morrison, from calling in from Deep Haven, and I'm the Vice Chair of Transportation.
Welcome. Is there anyone that we've missed in terms of introductions? Okay. Well, great. We've got a full house, and very much appreciate everybody coming out today. So, in terms of our agenda today, we're going to do a walkthrough of all three of the areas that we have jurisdiction over here in this conference committee. And then we will, after the walkthroughs, we do have some same and similars that we're going to be able to adopt today on the labor area. And then we'll go through the rest of the process for next week and other meetings that we intend to have. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was a question just to verify that we are going to be following. It looks like the only motion we're going to be dealing with today is on labor, same and similar. Is that correct? All right. Thank you.
But we'll have more on Monday.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so what I'd like to do is call on our nonpartisan staff to walk through the provisions of this bill, House, Senate, on all three areas of jurisdiction. I don't know if we have an order in which you would like to go. Transportation will go first.
Mr. Chair and members, Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff. I'll start by going through the transportation spreadsheet, so it should be in your packet. Give people a minute to find it there. So I'll walk through the provisions for the Department of Transportation and the Metropolitan Council, and then Krista Boyd from Senate Council and Fiscal will go through the remainder of the spreadsheet. So the first direct appropriations on the first page starts on line 4, and this is a Senate-only provision for a zero-emission bus transition plan to MnDOT for $100,000. And then on line 5, a dynamic transportation study, also to MnDOT from the general fund, of $300,000 on the Senate-only side. Then on the Senate-only side, a commercial driver workforce study of $250,000 from the general fund. Then moving to a governor and House position on line 11, this is authority for passenger rail fee collection. That's a statutory authority, but is noted here as MnDOT spending authority for both the governor and the House position. Then on the House side, on state roads, on line 14 is $300,000 a year from the Trunk Highway Fund for rumble strips on the House side, $1 million a year for community roadside landscape partnership from the Trunk Highway Fund. And then on the Senate side, on line 16, traffic safety camera pilot program for $1 million one time from the general fund. Then on line 17, drainage asset management, this is a governor and House position, $4.8 million. And I should note that the governor's position for trunk highway spending, this was part of the capital request. Then on the Senate side, on line 18, $105,000 a year from the Trunk Highway Fund for high-voltage transmission line staff time. And then $100,000 on the Senate side, general fund for purchase of an autonomous mower from the general fund. Then to state roads program delivery, $3 million one time on the House side from the Trunk Highway Fund for greenhouse gas emissions analysis, and $800,000 one time for greenhouse gas MPO grants, both from the Trunk Highway Fund. On the Senate side, $2 million one time for environmental impact statement for the Trunk Highway 55 corridor. Then jumping back to the House only, $1 million one time for Trunk Highway 65 intersection improvements from the Trunk Highway Fund. Then a governor's capital item and a House item, 7, and also in the Senate, on line 26, $7.75 million for rest area improvements. Then on the Senate-only side on line 29, state road construction one-time increase, $20 million in fiscal 2025 and a base of $10 million a year set in the tables. Then on the governor, House, and Senate side for high-priority bridges, one-time spending from the Trunk Highway Fund, the governor and the House have $40 million and the Senate has $10 million. For corridors of commerce on the Senate-only side, there's a $5.45 million appropriation in fiscal 25 and a base set of $70 million in the tails. Moving to page 2, local roads. On the House side, Mississippi Skyway Trail Bridge in the city of Ramsey. This is an appropriation out of the active transportation account of $3.75 million. And then on the House side, $9 million in a direct appropriation for small cities assistance. The small cities assistance funding on the Senate side is a statutory appropriation as a result of a general fund transfer that you can see later in the spreadsheet of $20 million. Then on line 20 or 39, $4 million from the general fund on the Senate side for grants to local governments for road improvements, and $200,000 for a grant to Shorewood for Trunk Highway 7 TMO development. $200,000 from the general fund. Then for a complete streets implementation training, the House has a statutory direction from the active transportation account, $245,000 a year. Well, the Senate does a direct appropriation that you can see on line 44, but the amounts are similar. Then on the Senate side, on line 45, there's a reappropriation from highway corridors, studies and local road grants at $15.56 million and a cancellation, both from the general fund, on the next line. Then on line 47, the House cancels $8 million from the last year's IIJA discretionary grant appropriation, and the Senate cancels $24.8 million. Under agency management, the House, Senate, and Governor have $20.1 million for transit or transportation facilities capital improvements, and the Senate has $1.35 million from the Trunk Highway Fund for capital security upgrades. Under Metropolitan Council, the House has a one-time $1 million general fund appropriation for Ramsey County and for rail insurance coverage, and the Senate has a $10 million cancellation for the Blue Line extension project and a $10 million reappropriation for Blue Line anti-displacement community prosperity program. And I'll turn that over to Ms. Boyd.
Ms. Boyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll start on line 67 of the side-by-side. It's a House-only provision. I believe all of the special revenue appropriations here in this section are from the Driver and Vehicle Services operating account under Driver and Vehicle Services. So line 67 is from that account for the House's intensive testing program, I believe related to controlled substance use. And that's $1.21 million in 25, and then $934,000 in 26, and $794,000 in 27, and ongoing. In line 68 is the governor's recommendation that is on both the House and Senate side as well at different appropriation levels for additional staff and operating costs for exam stations. The governor's recommendation was $2.039 million a year, and that is on the Senate side. The House position is $2.969 million a year, all starting in fiscal year 25. Line 69 is a Senate-only provision of $100,000 one time for a special license plate review committee study to be submitted to the legislature. Line 70 are the costs for translation of certain DVS materials into certain languages. And that is $172,000 appropriation one time in fiscal year 25. Then there are a couple of statutory appropriations on the Senate-only side. Line 71 is payments. Line 71 and 72 are payments to deputy registrars and driver's license agents, respectively, for $25 each for no-fee transactions completed at those offices, and those payments will be made back to the DRs and DLAs from DVS, from the Driver and Vehicle Services operating account. And that is approximately $682,000 a year for deputy registrars and $637,000 a year for DLAs. Line 73 is payments to driver's license agents for 50% of all those renewals for driver's license that happen online. And that is $388,000 approximately in fiscal year 25, $855,000 in 26, and $940,000 in 27, again from the DVS operating account. On page 3, Office of Traffic Safety, lines 76 and 77 are both appropriations for the Lights On Grant Program. in both the House and Senate bill. Line 76 is the House position. It's a one-time appropriation of $1.2 million from the DVS operating account in the Special Revenue Fund. Line 77 is a one-time appropriation from the Senate from the General Fund for $500,000 one time. Line 78 is a Senate-only provision, $200,000 one-time appropriation from the Motorcycle Safety account in the Special Revenue Fund for a public education program on motorcycle operation. And then moving on to two additional appropriations, one on line 85 to the University of Minnesota Center for Transportation Studies is a $350,000 one-time appropriation from the General Fund for a clean transportation standard study and report. And line 90 is an ongoing appropriation of $46,000 to the Department of Commerce from the General Fund. This is related to environmental review on the high voltage transmission line provisions along trunk highways. That's staff cost for environmental review. And that's it for appropriations. And we'll move down to lines 105, 106 for transfers. On the Senate only side, there is a one-time transfer from the General Fund to the Small Cities Assistance Account in the Special Revenue Fund of $20 million. On line 106, there is an ongoing transfer reduction from the General Fund to the Special Revenue Fund Active Transportation Account. This is a reduction to a previously enacted transfer, ongoing transfer. The reduction is $245,000 a year. And then down to revenue items, line 112 is related to the Passenger Rail Fee and Revenue Authority. That was a governor's recommendation and picked up on the House side of $1.5 million additional revenue in 24 and $8 million a year thereafter. Similar language is actually in the Senate bill, but the Fees and Revenues Authority is subject to legislative action, so there's no revenue booked for that in this bill. Line 113 is the acknowledged revenue from the General Fund transfer into the Small Cities Assistance Account and Special Revenue Fund of $20 million. Line 114 is the acknowledgement of the reduced revenue to the Active Transportation Account relative to the General Fund reduction transfer. On page 4, lines 115 and 116 are a governor's recommendation that was in the state government budget bill related to where the revenues are deposited from motor vehicle leasing sales taxes for local bridges. In current law, it goes into the state transportation fund. Unfortunately, that is mixed with bond proceeds funds, and this is designed to, there's a new account created called the Local Bridge Program account, and so this is showing the revenue reduced from the state transportation fund on line 116, and a gain to the new account on line 115. This is on both the governor and the Senate side. Department of Public Safety revenue on line 119. This is a provision on the Senate-only side that third-party proctors can administer knowledge tests after three failed attempts. Under current law, DVS has to proctor those exams. And so this would be slightly reduced revenue on line 119 to DVS of $103,000 starting in 26 and $112,000 in 27, and I believe thereafter. On line 120, on both House and Senate side at different levels, is related to the provision on dealer tax payment extension. And on the House side, that reduced revenue would be $525,000 in 25 and $700,000 ongoing. Again, that's to the DVS operating account. And on the Senate side, it's $600,000 reduction in 25 and $800,000 a year ongoing after that. On line 121, online driver's license renewal, let's see. For DVS, that increased revenue related to online driver's license renewal would be $668,000 in fiscal year 25, $1.47 million in 26, and $1.6 million in 27, and that is again to the DVS operating account. Lines 122 through 124 is related on the Senate side only to the allowance of issuance of fleet plates by deputy registrars. Currently, they're only issued by DVS. This would be a slight reduction to certain accounts related to filing fees that would no longer go to DVS and will be retained by the deputy registrar. So that is a reduction of $19,000 in fiscal year 25 and $26,000 year thereafter to the DVS operating account, reduction of $4,000 in 25 and $6,000 year thereafter to the DVS technology account, and a slight reduction to the general fund piece of that filing fee allocation of $1,000 in 25 and $2,000 a year in 26 and thereafter. Line 127 is a revenue that net zeroes out the above appropriation to the Department of Commerce for environmental review. This revenue can be regained by the department, so that's a net zero on that general fund piece of $46,000 a year. And then I'm just going to drop down to the bottom on line 146. The transportation committees had a target of $2 million net change in fiscal year 24 and 25, and you can see where the Senate and the House both meet that target in that biennium. And that is it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Ms. Boyd, Mr. Lee. And now we'll also have an announcement. We can't have folks standing, so there is an overflow room open with a live feed of the hearing, and the sergeant-at-arms can lead people to... we all, I guess, folks are here. Some folks can sit in the front. Our staff is making their presentations from the table. So, well, Representative Petersburg, we're now into member questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could ask Mr. Lee on a line 40, let's see, gotta make sure you went here. On line 47, I know we have a lot of cancellations from IAJ and for other things. Rather than me trying to figure out where it's at, the $24 million that's canceled out for in, on the Senate side only, where did that get used for in the Senate version?
Sorry, I got distracted for 1 second. Can you repeat?
Sure. On line 47 on page 2, cancellation from IAJ of $24.8 million from the Senate side. I know that we transfer that around. Rather than me having to look for it, I'm sure Mr. Lee can tell me right off the bat approximately where those funds are used for elsewhere.
Mr. Lee could answer that, but I think Ms. Boyd, since that's it, the Senate
either way, division.
Ms. Boyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bulk of the reduction, I believe, went to the small cities assistance one-time transfer.
$20 million.
From the general fund to that account of $20 million. And then, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, they're not, the cancellation and other appropriations were not directly related, so I can only point out to you the other general fund items. And, of course, that would be a net of $2 million, but there were a number of studies under MnDOT for zero-emission buses, dynamic transportation, commercial driver workforce in the hundreds of thousands in fiscal year 25. There's a $1 million appropriation for the traffic safety camera pilot program. These all net out to $2 million over and above base. So I don't have a direct line, but the bulk of it is the $20 million for small cities.
Follow-up, Representative.
Oh, no, thank you. That's enough. I thought the bulk of it went to small cities. I just want to make sure that I was right. And I know there's a lot of other cancellations moving back and forth, too, but that was my only question. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions from members? Online. Mr. Burris will walk through some of the non-fiscal.
Mr. Chair and members, again, Matt Burris with House Research. I'll be trading off with Mr. Greenfield on walking through the language provisions in Article, largely Article 2. First, though, Article 1 in House File 5242 contains the transportation-related appropriations. So that's the language that is reflected in the spreadsheet that was just reviewed. So that has a number of direct appropriations, transfers, as well as some revisions to prior year laws to, including to broaden some permissible uses of funds, reference, change of reference to a MnDOT program being established in the language There's also some reductions in appropriations, and I think I had mentioned transfers. So that's all found in Article 1. And moving to Article 2, I'll be moving off, working off of a comparison summary that's in members' packets. And it's also a transportation finance side-by-side document as well. So beginning with Article 2, there's a number of sections that are House-only, kind of peppered throughout, that relate to modifications to the ignition interlock program and establishing a new intensive testing program. And this is for issuance of a restricted license in some situations that involve controlled or intoxicating substances violations, so non-alcohol, and establishes a program somewhat parallel to ignition interlock, but is for intensive testing. And then that's just a series of sections kind of found throughout.
Mr. Chair and members of the Conference Committee, Tim Greenfield, a nonpartisan Senate counsel for the Transportation Committee. I'll be identifying the Senate-only provisions, and there are quite a number of Senate-only provisions in the transportation portion of House File 5242. The second line of the comparison summary that was put together by nonpartisan staff is the traffic safety camera pilot project that's being established in the Senate language, which includes both speed limit and red light enforcement. The substantive provisions of the pilot program were modified slightly on the Senate floor to begin commencement of the pilot program beginning on August 1, 2025. And a few provisions were added on this, as well in that amendment to specifically address concerns related to commercial driver's licenses and violations that occurred in commercial motor vehicles. So for members' purposes who are following along on the comparison summary, there are a list of reviser pages. The substantive portion of the red light and speed limit camera enforcement pilot program really began on page R48 and R51, where that is starting to begin to cite to chapter 168 and 169, the traffic regulations chapters of law. In addition, the amendment that was adopted on the Senate floor also amended a 2023 report on speed camera enforcement to study implementation issues and legislative challenges that have been posed by the consideration of this proposal, and that is found on page R131 and is section 125. So those are the kind of high-level changes that were brought forth on the Senate floor in addition to the date of the commencement of the pilot project beginning. The next line on the comparison summary is R22, which is a Senate-only provision related to a MnDOT Trunk Highway Fund and Highway User Tax Distribution Fund reporting requirement to include the estimated percentage of activities performed that are not for trunk highway purposes.
Following that, there is a House-only provision that is found in Section 2 on the House side. This is direction to MnDOT on establishing rumble strips at some specified locations on the trunk highway system. Following that, there are a couple of memorial named facilities for the trunk highway system. These are also House-only provisions. The first is to establish a memorial bridge in Granite Falls, and the second is a memorial bridge over the Mississippi River. Following that, both House and Senate have a set of provisions around transportation, greenhouse gas emissions, and vehicle miles traveled reductions, impacts, and assessment. There are some policy differences between the House and Senate, including the Senate having an exemption provision and a count that's established, as well as a difference in the advisory committee membership. So generally speaking, both House and Senate have the proposal to establish a variety of changes to the impact assessment program, shifting to a portfolio, as well as establishing a technical advisory committee.
The next provision on the comparison summary is for reviser page R31 that amends the legislative report submitted by MnDOT on the privatization of transportation contracts to include certain demographic and workforce information. Both the House and Senate have provisions with minor technical differences pertaining to the placement and location of high voltage transmission lines across or along the trunk highway right-of-way. And there are also requirements provided for relocation costs and reimbursement limitations. The Senate on R34 begins its language that establishes authorization for all cities to designate lands for pedestrian malls on city rights-of-way. On R35 begins provisions that pertain to debt service authorization from newly established dedicated transportation revenues for local governments. Beginning on R36 and a variety of other sections on the comparison summary are provisions that establish registration and operation requirements for roadable aircraft. This was a Senate-only provision. On R37 of the comparison summary, there is both the House and the Senate have provisions that extend the valid period for a temporary permit for a vehicle that can be issued to a buyer of a new motor vehicle, the temporary license plate, from 21 to 60 days, and there's a minor technical difference between the bodies.
And then the next provision is a House only. It's a modification to a professional sports team plate, special plate, that allows for donations related to Minnesota United version of that plate to go to the Minnesota Loon Restoration Project. This is found on R39. It's House Section 15.
Turning to page 5 of the comparison summary, there are a litany of Senate only provisions with just one House provision that I'll cover. Beginning for the R41 reviser page on the comparison summary, this is a provision that authorizes deputy registrars to conduct certain transactions related to vehicle fleets and the registration of fleet vehicles. R42 is a Senate-only provision that contains some technical clarifications for the motorcycle safety account. The House has an only provision that modifies and establishes a new Rotary International Special License Plate and provides for plate requirements, eligibility, donations, design, and transfer requirements. R44 on the comparison summary is a Senate-only provision that modifies auto dealers' access to replacement or duplicate license plates for vehicles currently registered in Minnesota. A dealer is required to apply for a certificate of title before receiving the duplicate plate and must remove plates validly issued at the time of the title transfer. The next line on the comparison summary is provision that's connected to the extension of a deadline for submission of title or title transfer application following the sale of a motor vehicle. There's a minor difference between the House and Senate in the length of deadline. The House has 20 calendar days while the Senate has 30 days. On R45 of the comparison summary, this is a Senate-only provision that requires the Commissioner of Public Safety to distribute funds to deputy registrars and driver's license agents based on instances of no-fee transactions. The next line of the comparison summary, beginning with R46, is Senate-only language that pertains to requiring the Commissioner of Public Safety to conduct rulemaking for a competitive bidding process for when a deputy registrar or driver's license agent closes their office location and then provides certain location authorization requirements and other parameters of that rulemaking. The R139 provision on the comparison summary is a legislative report that will be complete before the commissioners to conduct rulemaking. On R47, it's a comparison summary. This is a Senate-only provision that pertains to the release of leased motor vehicle information. Turning to page 6 of the comparison summary.
This provision relates to electric-assisted bicycles. And there are a number of sections. The language is found in both House and Senate with some differences. There's some modifications to categorization and definition, some of the riding rules around e-bikes, safety training requirements, as well as a study on the Senate side. A couple of the other differences on labeling, definitions, and the disclosure requirements are kind of highlights of differences between House and Senate. And then the next item in the comparison summary is also a series of sections that relate to active transportation. This has some modifications on direction to MnDOT on guidance for the complete streets requirements and training, as well as driver education and knowledge tests around vulnerable road users. So bicyclists, motorcyclists, pedestrians, and the like. This has some policy as well as technical differences between the House and Senate.
The next line on the comparison summary pertains to a requirement that the Minnesota Council on Disability design a new uniform disability parking sign for use statewide and consistent with ADA requirements, and then sets forth certain requirements for when the new sign is to be installed at either newly created parking facilities or on the regular course of replacement of existing signs at a property. R68 on the comparison summary pertains to the Lights on Grant program that is both in the House and Senate. The bodies have a policy difference in terms of how the grant is to be administered and the voucher distribution preferences. The Senate has more extensive grant preference criteria and requires reporting on how the grant voucher proceeds are to be administered. R70 on the comparison summary are two Senate-only provisions. The first pertains to child passenger restraint and education account. This makes a technical change. And the second is a provision that was added on the Senate floor that permits an additional escort vehicle, escort driver in lieu of a peace officer for the hauling of certain overdimensional loads. Turning to page 7 on the comparison summary, there's a raft of Senate-only provisions, so I apologize. Beginning on R71 for the comparison summary, this is a Senate-only provision that pertains to the road construction material overweight permit. The next line in the comparison summary is a Senate-only provision that authorizes lane filtering under certain traffic circumstances, which allows a motorcyclist to operate a motorcycle either abreast of or to overtake or pass another vehicle within the same traffic lane or between two parallel lanes of moving or stationary traffic headed in the same direction. The second portion of that requirement is, or authority, is a public education campaign that must be conducted by the Department of Public Safety before lane filtering is to become legally effective. The third line on the comparison summary is the authorization of a temporary mailing address that allows applicants for DVS credentials to designate a temporary mailing address. The fourth line on the comparison summary on page 7 is authorization of online renewal of real ID compliant and non-compliant driver's licenses. And there are a variety of sections that pertain to the certificates that may be submitted as part of that online renewal process. R86 on page 7 of the comparison summary is the repeal of the requirement that DVS administer the fourth or subsequent exams for the online driver's knowledge test. The next section is a clarification regarding the reintegration driver's license and prohibiting the reinstatement of a reinstatement fee. The next line on the on the comparison summary on page for R93 is language that's in both the House and Senate that pertains to tribal worksite training program. The Senate has specific language that prohibits trunk highway funds from being expended for training projects that don't pertain to highway construction. On R94 is a Senate-only provision pertaining to pavement life cycle analysis. And on R99, there is a technical clarification to the Safe Routes to School accounts in the Special Revenue Fund. Finally, the last line of significant Senate-only provisions, beginning on page 8 of the comparison summary, and R99 of the revisor side-by-side is the designation of the responsible authority, which requires MnDOT to be the designated responsible authority for the construction and other phases of certain bus rapid transit and light rail transit projects in the metropolitan area.
And then on R100 of the side-by-side, both House and Senate established a transportation facilities capital program that would be administered by MnDOT for agency buildings and facilities. This includes setting out eligibility and prioritization requirements. And there is a difference between House and Senate in a couple of technical pieces, and then a reference to sustainable building guidelines on the Senate side. Next provision relates to passenger rail and provides authority to MnDOT for fee and revenue collection in passenger rail service. This is both House and Senate language, or there is language in both bodies with some policy differences. The House identifies a purpose. The Senate has a reporting requirement added and also restricts establishing a fee until following legislative enactment of the authority around fee setting. The next provision is House only. It's found on R104 as well as R110 of the side-by-side. This makes a couple of adjustments to the motor carrier of railroad employee regulations, including to increase insurance requirements, lay out a civil enforcement process administered by MnDOT, and require some analyses related to federal preemption as well as impacts on the agricultural sector. And then R105 has a couple of related but somewhat more substantively different versions that relate to wayside detector systems. So the House language sets out requirements for railroads to use wayside detectors and has some analyses that are similar to the prior ones mentioned for rail carrier or carriers of rail employees. The Senate approach is to require a study on wayside detector systems or other scanning technology and outline some of the information that must be analyzed and looked at in the course of the study. R107 on the side-by-side has another House-only provision. This sets and regulates train lengths in the state, as well as laying out fines and requiring some analyses of the provision. That, again, is a House-only provision. And then both House and Senate have language requiring and setting out hours of service for yard masters, some supervisory railroad employees. And there are both policy and technical differences between the House and Senate. The House language has some analyses similar to the prior ones mentioned with federal preemption and agricultural impacts. And there's a difference in effective date between House and Senate.
The next item on the comparison summary begins on reviser page R113 of the side-by-side, and this is a Senate-only provision that pertains to the motor vehicle leasing sales tax revenue as it's directed to local bridges. R120 is a provision that's in both the House and Senate as it pertains to Metropolitan Council financial review that provides various fiscal details about the transportation area of the Council's budget. The next item on the comparison summary is R121. This is a language that's in both the House and the Senate that relates to zero emission and electric transit vehicles. The substantive requirement is the same on R121 between the House and Senate, so House Section 55 and Senate Section 107. The only difference is a very minor technical difference in a reviser instruction. On R125, there are some policy and technical differences between the House and Senate that relates to the Metropolitan's construction and funding of certain aspects of bus rapid transit projects and pedestrian infrastructure. On R126 of the comparison summary, this is a Senate-only provision that amends statutorily required cleaning and repair standards for Metro Transit vehicles and property and modifies the legislative reporting requirements to require a now annual report related to cleaning and repair standards. The final item on page 9 of the comparison summary is a Senate-only provision that requires each metropolitan county to report on the use of regional transportation sales tax and use revenue. And then turning to how page 10, the majority of these items on the comparison summary are Senate-only provisions. I'll cover the first two and then pivot to my colleague. So the first two on the comparison summary of page 10 amend previously enacted session law. The first is 2021 session law pertaining to the driver's license same-day issuance pilot project. This language it reflects credential requirements based on the same-day issuance of credentials at certain specified locations. The next item is authorization of a full-service provider at or near the Hmong Village Shopping Center in St. Paul. And then Mr. Burris will cover the next item.
And the following provision found on page R132 is a House-only item. It is House Section 57, and this provides some direction to MnDOT on its Community Roadside Landscape Partnership Program and some considerations for expansion of that program.
The remaining items on the comparison summary, beginning with the revised page R132, is a variety of either uncodified session law, and that provides a variety of different either studies or reporting requirements. But the first item that is of substance is the anti-displacement community prosperity programming requirements and the board that is established to administer the programming. The programming must be used to support a variety of community functions to counter displacement impacts from the Blue Line Light Rail Transit Extension Project. Then R134 on the comparison summary to the bottom of the table on page 10 are a variety of different studies. I apologize. The item on R140 is a requirement that DVS produce its materials in languages other than English. That is a Senate-only provision that was brought forth and carried in the transportation bill. The next page, the final page of the comparison summary on page 11, conclude with a variety of other studies that are Senate-only provisions. On R145 is a city speed limit analysis study. On R147 of the side-by-side is a clean fuel, transportation fuel standard study at the Center for Transportation Studies at the University of Minnesota. On R149 of the side-by-side is a study for the Metropolitan Council regarding its transportation service plan for the 2024 Minnesota State Fair. On R150 is a study for the Department of Public Safety that pertains to establishing and studying a potential review committee for special license plates. On R151, this requires MnDOT to incorporate the latest version of the Federal Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices for purposes of traffic engineering studies and setting speed limits. And then the final provision on page 11 of the transportation side-by-side is a repealer that repeals an administrative rule pertaining to the length of instruction for commercial vehicle, motor vehicle training at post-secondary institutions. And that concludes the comparison summary for the transportation articles.
Thank you so much, Mr. Greenfield. Are there member questions of either Mr. Burris or Mr. Greenfield? Okay. Thank you to our really incredible nonpartisan fiscal staff, as well as House Research. Job well done on the side-by-sides for transportation. Now we're going to move on to the labor portion of the walkthrough. Not sure who wants to proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Eric Olofsson, Senate Fiscal Analyst for the Labor Committee. In your packets, you should have a one-page front and back spreadsheet, top left corner, 2024 Labor Supplemental Budget Conference Committee Comparison, time stamp in the bottom right-hand corner, 5/8/2024, 5:34 p.m. Ms. Roberts and I'll walk through the Senate positions, and then I'll hand it over to her to walk through the House positions. And just the column A goes through the different, describes the appropriations, and columns F through K shows the Senate positions, while L through S shows the House positions. And with that, I will begin walking through the Senate positions for the Department of Labor and Industry. So within the Labor Standards Division on line 8, there's a cancellation of $310,000 from the general fund for earned sick and safe time rulemaking. But on line 9, there's an FY25. But on line 9, that's reappropriated with that $310,000 is reappropriated with extended availability through fiscal year 27, specifically for rulemaking. On line 10, for private sector personnel records, this is to inform and educate employers. There's $141,000 from the general fund in fiscal year 25, and that's ongoing and entails for a total of $282,000. On line 10, on line 11, there's an operating adjustment of $102,000 one time to the Labor Standards Division at DLI. Moving on down to line 15, this comes from the Workforce Development Fund. This is for prevailing wage enforcement for multifamily housing development projects under low income tax credits. $61,000 from the Workforce Development Fund beginning in fiscal year 25 ongoing. So $61,000 in fiscal year 25 and $122,000 total in the tails. On line 19, this is for this is within the Workplace Safety Division, but this is for rulemaking for acceptable blood lead levels for workers. This comes from the Workers' Compensation Fund. This is $279,000 in fiscal year 25 and $143,000 in fiscal year 26 with no ongoing appropriations. Moving on down to line 23, this is $9 million to Department of Labor and Industry, one time from the general fund for the Tending the Soil Rise Up Center redevelopment. Line 27 is a budget neutral item for the Office of Combative Sports, a promote technical fix that we're tracking. Moving on down to line 31 for the licensing and certification requirements for underground telecommunication installers. This comes from the Construction Code Fund. The enactment date was pushed to begin in fiscal year 26, so it's $38,000 in fiscal year 26 and then $15,000 assumed to be ongoing in fiscal year 27. Moving on down to line 37 for the Contractor Recovery Fund. This is a governor's proposal. It increases the cap that you can claim. So it's increased cost of $228,000 ongoing beginning in fiscal year 25 from the Contractor Recovery Fund, which is an account in the Special Revenue Fund. And then that concludes walking through DLI, and I'll hand it back to Ms. Roberts to walk through the House positions.
Thank you so much. Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff, and we'll take you back up to the top of the spreadsheet and also notice that there's a shaded column that shows the difference between the House and Senate, so I'm just really going to focus on those items. On line 10, the House also funds the private sector personnel records, but only with one-time funding in fiscal year 25 of $141,000. The House has a $56,000 operating adjustment for DLI for the Labor Standards Division, and this continues in the tails at $70,000 per year. And then finally, there's a $200,000 one-time appropriation, 12 that's for education and training related to the misclassification of employees. The next House item is the same as the Senate under the Workplace Safety Division for the acceptable blood lead levels for workers rulemaking. I'll just point out, you'll see later in the spreadsheet that the House does have funding for tending the soil. We have it in a different agency. Moving down to line 33, the House only position, there's some funding here from the Construction Codes Fund that's related to a provision for enforcement for residential pool installation. And then you'll also see that there's additional funding in the House on line 38 for the Contractor Recovery Fund, which is also related to this provision for residential pool installation, and that would be for reimbursements from that fund. Both the House and Senate, I'll move on to BMS. You'll see that both the House and Senate have cost neutral provisions that call for reallocation of certain funding, one related to police officer grievance arbitration, and then one for the Labor Management Committee. So those are allocations within existing funding. And then I can move to the bottom of the spreadsheet for the House under Department of Health. This is identical for both the House and Senate. We have funding within the Department of Health for rulemaking, again, related to acceptable blood lead levels for workers.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, one other difference from the Senate position is on line 55 for the updates to PELRA for labor relations staffing costs. This comes from the general fund. It's $335,000 in fiscal year 25, $452,000 in fiscal year 26, then $403,000 in fiscal year 27. And that just for the bills traveling with for all the provisions within the bill on line 66. It's a total general fund cost of $9,752,000 in fiscal year 25, $593,000 in fiscal year 26, and $544,000 in fiscal year 27. But if I'll point you to the back side of the sheet, on moving on, we are also tracking the costs and revenues of the worker misclassification bill, which is traveling separately on the Senate side. So on, so just moving on down to line 93, for enforcement and outreach, Senate file 4483 appropriates $56,000 in FY25 and then $70,000 ongoing in the tails. And then for misclassification information sharing agreement, this is on line 94, it's $143,000 one time. And then for to the Attorney General's office, it would be $49,000 in fiscal year 25 and $49,000 in fiscal year 26, and then $98,000 in fiscal year 27 to represent DLI in contested cases. And then there is also associated misclassification penalty revenue, but this is traveling separately in the Senate position. Of $712,000 beginning fiscal year 26 to the general fund ongoing for a total of $1.424 million in the tails. So on the Senate side, the Senate received a general fund target of $10 million, net $10 million one time in the 24-25 biennium with net zero in the tails. And on line 109, you can see that with the misclassification bill, the Senate position meets that target. Oh, and one other position that both the House and the Senate has for a bill that's moving separately is on line 83 for the workers' compensation penalty revenue. That's $6,000 to the workers' compensation fund ongoing beginning in fiscal year 25. And I'll hand it back to Ms. Roberts if she has anything else to add.
Members, I would point you back up to the top of page, the second to the last page. I was looking for the page number where the House has some additional funding that goes through the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The first one on line 59 is the $9 million one-time funding for tending the soil that the Senate also has, but has under DLI. And then there's additional $1.7 million beginning in fiscal year 25 and continuing into the tails related to broadband equity access and deployment. The totals for the House General Fund is $11.3 million, so that is higher than the amount that the Senate was tracking. I should note some other differences. You'll see some beginning on line 85, some just small differences in non-general fund revenues, and those are all related to that residential pool installation provision. And then for the House does include the misclassification bill and the labor bill. There are some small differences in that the House position did not fund the costs related to Department of Revenue and the Attorney General's office. And I think, again, as I had noted, the total House spending is $11.3 million from the general fund, and that does meet the adjusted House target.
Okay, thank you very much. Chair Dibble.
Thank you. Maybe I'm just catching up here, but are the Senate and the House general fund targets different from each other?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Thank you. All right.
Any other questions on labor? We'll be returning to labor shortly for some motions. But before we do that, we would like to get into the housing portion of the walkthrough. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Oh. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. So we talked about the financials here. Are we going to deal with the side-by-side comparisons and same Simmons language later.
Oh, one second. We're going to do the walkthrough and then we're going to do. Are these the motion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I think you could do it one of two ways. We could do the walkthrough and talk about the sames, and you could adopt it at that time, or we could do our walkthrough now and then come back and do the sames and similar. So it is up to you, however you would like to do it.
Miserating with the chair here. Representative Nelson, did you have a preference?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why don't we do the housing walkthrough, and then we can come back and do the walkthrough, and then do the motions at that time.
Okay, thanks. Always defer to the chair. Okay, so now let's do the housing.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is Dan Mueller, Senate Fiscal Analyst for the Housing Committee. I will start working off the housing spreadsheet. The housing budget area had a $10 million target for fiscal year 24-25 and a $1 million target in the tails. The spreadsheet is structured. There's a House column and Senate column. All the spending for both the House and the Senate is all in fiscal year 25. So that is the only columns we're showing here. And then I'll note that the tails later is dealing with a completely different issue. So all the spending here in the House and the Senate or any reductions are one time. And I'll also note there is no column for the governor's budget because the governor's did not have a budget, any budget items in this area. So I'll start first, Housing Finance Agency on line 3. Both the Senate and the House had an additional a little over $8.8 million to the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program. This is in addition to a base appropriation of $10.2 million that was appropriated last year. And so there's a slight difference between the House and the Senate of $81,000 between these two. On line 4, the House had a 10% allocation from this appropriation for Minnesota tribes. On line 5 is the House and the Senate both had an appropriation for the homeless study by the Wilder Foundation. The House was at $100,000, the Senate was at $500,000. On line 6 is a Senate only item. It's for the Wilder Park Association. It's a major capital renovation project, and it's for $3.25 million. Line 7, both the House and the Senate had a $50 million appropriation for the Housing Affordability and Preservation Investment Program, which is a recapitalization program. On line 8, both the House and Senate had an appropriation for emergency rental assistance working group implementation. The House was at $270,000 and the Senate was at $471,000. On line 9, both the House and the Senate had a reduction to appropriation for housing infrastructure. This was a $40 million reduction from a $100 million appropriation that was in last year's budget bill. $100 million that was a fiscal year 25 appropriation. On line 10, both the House and the Senate has a reduction for community stabilization. This is from a $45 million appropriation in fiscal year 25 that was in last year's budget bill. So the House has a $10 million reduction, and the Senate has a $13.25 million reduction to that appropriation. And now I'll turn it over to the House.
Mr. Chair and members, Katrina Highmark, House Fiscal Analysis. I'll be focusing on the appropriations to other departments. On line 12 and 13, you see a provision in the Senate bill that has $225,000 appropriation to the Department of Labor and Industry for a single exit stairway apartment building report. There is a House provision on lines 15 and 16 that discuss an appropriation for Minnesota Management and Budget to develop a working group on common interest communities and homeowners associations. Lines 18 and 19 deal with an appropriation that is also only in the House bill regarding the Supreme Court and retroactive eviction record expungements. As my colleague, Mr. Mueller, explained, the House and the Senate had a $10 million target in fiscal 25 and a $1 million target in fiscal 27. Both the House and the Senate used that $1 million target for a $50 million housing infrastructure bonds debt service. I also want to point out that this debt service also incurs costs of $2.8 million in fiscal 2028 and $4 million in fiscal 29. And ongoing for the life of the bonds. And that, Mr. Chair, concludes the housing spreadsheet.
Thank you very much. Other member question? Okay. All right. And now we can move on to the other provisions. Housing.
Mr. Chair and members, Laura Painter, Senate analyst. I'll take us through the housing non-appropriations articles. I'm going to be working with the same, similar, different document that I believe is in your packets and talking about provisions that are in House Articles 13 and 14 and Senate Articles 12 and 13, starting with the revisor page R3 to R8 and R11. There are a number of sections that modify provisions relating to energy conservation and improvement to refer to climate resiliency, decarbonization, clean energy, and climate resiliency. On page R8, section modifies a provision allowing the Housing Finance Agency to treat American Indian tribes as eligible recipients of funding so that it applies to session law programs as well as statutory programs. Page R10 is a section that allows the Housing Finance Agency to determine that a household meets the income limits of any Housing Finance Agency program if the household receives means-based public assistance. Page R11, there's a section requiring the Housing Finance Agency to project the amount of funding necessary annually to provide rental assistance to all households that would qualify. Page R12, section increases the Housing Finance Agency general obligation debt ceiling from $5 billion to $7 billion. On page R12, there's a section transferring authority to collect administrative costs of administering the Manufactured Home Relocation Trust Fund from Minnesota Management and Budget to the Housing Finance Agency, conforming to changes made in the 2023 housing bill. On pages R15 to R16, there's a section requiring Minnesota Management and Budget to appropriate to the Housing Finance Agency the amount necessary to pay the debt service on the housing infrastructure bonds. On revisor pages R16 to R17, there's a section removing certain geographic and population limits for the Workforce Housing Development Program. On revisor pages R19 to R20, there's a section specifying that the same requirements applying to grants through the Minnesota Housing Tax Credit Program also apply to loans. Also expands eligibility for grants and loans to include previously disqualified individuals and businesses and allows the Housing Finance Agency to rely on an applicant's statements about their eligibility to determine their eligibility for grants and loans. Pages R37 to R39 is a section allowing a set-aside of a 2023 appropriation of the Challenge Program for Urban Homeworks to be used on gap financing and on a broader range of low-income households. Page R39 is a section expanding the eligible uses of a Northland Foundation appropriation from 2023 to include assisting and supporting communities in providing housing locally. Page R39, there's a section removing a geographic requirement from the definition of eligible home buyer for the purposes of the fee-based down payment assistance program enacted in last year's session. Pages R43 to R44 establish the Housing Affordability Preservation Investment Program. Now I'm going to move on to some differences in these articles. Starting on page R1 and R10 and also R20 to R23 are some House-only provisions allowing housing and redevelopment authorities to create public corporations to participate in the Federal Rental Assistance Demonstration Program
The sections specify that certain provisions governing other public corporations do not apply to these corporations, allows these public corporations to act as cities for the purposes of the chapter of law governing municipal housing, and modifies the Housing Finance Agency publicly owned housing program to list these public corporations as eligible funding recipients. On pages R1 and R2, there are some Senate-only provisions that prohibit certain practices relating to property management companies and also prohibiting municipalities from conditioning residential project approval on certain requirements. Now on page 3 of the summary document, reviser pages R3 to R4 and also R11 are some House-only provisions that add definitions for distressed building and recapitalization to the chapter governing the Housing Finance Agency, and also allowing the use of the Preservation of Affordable Rental Investment Fund on recapitalization of distressed buildings and exempting recapitalization financing from certain mortgager requirements. On pages R8 to R10, this is only in the House Housing article, but it's also in the Senate Labor article on pages R34 and R35 of the Labor side-by-side. This imposes certain disclosure and verification requirements on applicants for and recipients of the Housing Finance Agency funding, and requires wage theft prevention plans for funding recipients not paying statutorily required wages. It also provides the Housing Finance Agency with enforcement mechanisms. On page R10, there's a House-only provision allowing the Housing Finance Agency to adjust income or rent limits for state multifamily capital funding programs to align with federal standards for the low-income housing tax credit or the exempt facility bond. And page R12, there's a House-only provision limiting rental increases in senior housing buildings receiving the low-income housing tax credit to the percentage increase in Social Security, excepting projects owned by nonprofits and units in which the rent is paid with ongoing government rental assistance. And now I'll pass it to Mr. Cope.
Thank you, Ms. Painter. Mr. Chair and members, Justin Cope, House Research Analyst. I'll be concluding the walkthrough of the housing policy items.
Thank you.
On R12 to R15, there's a section in which both the House and Senate specify that a roll-in shower is needed in only one of the accessible units required by multifamily housing funded with housing infrastructure bonds. The House additionally expands allowable uses of housing infrastructure bonds and expands eligibility for funding for supportive housing funded through housing infrastructure bonds. And on R15, both the House and the Senate authorized the issuance of $50 million in new housing infrastructure bonds, but the Senate specifies that issuance can be in one or more series. Running from R17 to R18, there's a Senate-only provision modifying the Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grant Program to allow grants to be made to counties as well as cities, and it also expands eligible projects to include manufactured home development projects. Running from pages R18 to R19, there's a House-only provision removing a set-aside for the Minnesota Housing Tax Credit Program. And then I'm turning to page 4 of the comparison summary. On page R21 of the side-by-side, there's a Senate-only provision that amends the powers of housing and redevelopment authorities to allow those authorities to provide financial assistance for capital repairs or replacements in certain buildings. Running from page R23 to R28 of the side-by-side is a set of House-only provisions modifying the local affordable housing aid program by expanding the stated purpose of the program to include supportive housing, by expanding the projects the aid can fund, by deeming certain committed funds expended for the purposes of the aid as meeting the aid expenditure deadline, and by modifying administrative provisions for the aid. Running from pages R28 to R37, there are a number of Senate-only provisions restricting the conduct of homeowners associations and common interest communities. From page R40 to R41, there's a House-only provision requiring, establishing a task force with MHFA to determine ways to improve the financial health of affordable housing providers. On pages R41 to R42, there's another house-only provision that requires MHFA in consultation with DHS to develop recommendations for speeding up the processing of emergency rental assistance. On page R42, both bills contain a provision requiring the agency to develop uniform e-signature options. The Senate version applies only to MHFA, while the House also applies the requirement to the Commissioner of Human Services. On page R42, there's a House-only provision encouraging MHFA and DHS to make a number of changes to improve language access services for their rental assistance programs. From page R42 to R43, both bodies include language requiring agencies develop recommendations to simplify the process of verifying information for rental assistance programs. The Senate version applies only to MHFA and the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program, while the House version applies to emergency general assistance and emergency assistance from the Department of Human Services. On the final page of the comparison summary, on R44, there's Senate-only language requiring MHFA to evaluate the financial impacts of low-income housing rental housing tax programs and to report on those findings to the legislature. On R44, there's another Senate-only provision requiring the Commissioner of Labor and Industry to study the safety of single-exit stairway apartment buildings and report on those findings to the legislature. On R45, both bodies require that MHFA submit an annual report to the legislature on applications for funding, awards granting, and the number of housing units impacted by funding through the agency. The House version specifies that the reporting requirement only applies to appropriations to MHFA and this act and the laws of 2023 and future appropriations. On page R45, there's a revisor instruction to recodify one section dealing with housing infrastructure bonds, and the House also includes a revisor instruction to update a reference to include the new chapter 308C if 308C is enacted this year. Page R45 to R46, there's a House-only provision prohibiting landlords from denying a rental unit to a tenant based on the use of assistance that helps the tenant pay rent. On R46, there's a House-only provision making the mandatory eviction expungement provisions that were enacted last year retroactive. Page R46 to R48, there's another House-only provision creating a working group to study common interest communities and homeownership associations. And finally, on R48, there's a Senate-only provision that requires MHFA to work with the Department of Human Services to develop criteria for measuring the timeliness of processing rental assistance applications and to report on its findings to the legislature on those findings in 2027. And Mr. Chair and members, that concludes the walkthrough of the housing policy items.
Thank you very much. Excellent work. Are there questions? Yes, Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to page 3 on that provision, that's R8 to R10, Article 13 of the House, Section 14, that we have similar language in the labor bill. I believe it's the same language. I guess my question is, where would it be the best place to put that if they match up and we adopt it? Would it be, I mean, I guess staff would be the one to tell us.
Yeah, I was just going to defer to staff.
Yeah, sure, whether it be better in housing or better in the labor section.
Anyone from nonpartisan staff have advice?
Mr. Chair, since the one's speaking up, I will. I don't know that it makes a difference. It's all in the same bill. It refers to a particular statute, so it would just go in that statute when it becomes law. So I don't, unless someone else disagrees, I don't know that it matters.
Mr. Chair, the only thing I would add is my understanding is that the appropriations are in the labor section. But again, it doesn't matter in terms of.
I think we may want to be consistent with the appropriation.
That answers the question. I guess I noticed that I was told about it, and I looked it up, and reading through it, it looks to be the same, Mr. Chair. And so I just want to make sure that we include it.
Okay, great. Are there questions on the housing, questions or comments? Okay, well, then members will move on to agenda item 3, where we have some motions, I believe.
Mr. Chair, do we want to walk through the same,
yes,
similar,
let's do
before
that.
We do that? Then.
Yeah. So,
Ms. James.
This is the document, this walkthrough of labor finance sections, and we'll do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So I will get started with the labor finance walkthrough. So again, the first article, Article 3, is the labor appropriations that Ms. Roberts already went over. And then starting with the next article on R6, I'm going to go through this pretty high level. But from R6 to R11 is our provisions related to combative sports. Most of these are similar or the same. Both have an increase to the contractor recovery fund cap to 100,000, and then they both contain several policy and technical provisions. And then there's a Senate only provision on the privacy of combative sports data. From R12 to R16 are construction codes and licensing provisions. These are both, all of these sections, are house only sections. Related to more efficient residential energy code, as well as adding a residential pool installation to the grounds for recovery under the contractor recovery fund. From R16 to R32, these are provisions related to the Bureau of Mediation Services. Again, these are largely the same or similar, related to training and the payment of training for the Peace Officer Grievance Arbitration Roster, as well as a repealer section for laws and rules related to the Labor Management Committee Grant Program. The next article is the Public Employee Labor Relations, or PELRA, article. There are many similarities, but also several differences. Again, I will just go over these very high level, and we're happy to answer any more specific questions. So these start on R17 and go to R32. It starts with several Senate-only provisions on R17 through R20. These are related to personnel data dissemination, definitions under PELRA for employment and teacher, as well as the appointment of an alternate board member to the PERB when a member is unavailable. There are also several similarities in technical provisions, and these are related to the open meeting law and payroll deduction sections, and also bargaining unit information. These are all different provisions. Starting on R23, there's a provision related to access for exclusive representative meetings. Then there's several, two Senate-only provisions related to bargaining units and determinations. R25 to R27, they are the same and make technical changes to state employee bargaining units. And then R27 to R28 have provisions related to majority verification procedure. Again, these are same or similar. The remaining sections are there's four more sections that are Senate only, starting on R28 to R32. And these are related to unfair labor practices and appropriate units, as well as collective bargaining agreements related to individual care providers. Finally, there's some similar provisions allowing for rulemaking related to a majority verification, and then technical numbering instruction to the revisor. And I will turn it over to my counterpart, Ms. Doyle Fontaine.
Thank you, Ms. James. Mr. Chair, members, I will start with the miscellaneous labor provisions article. The first sections are on R33 to R34. Both the House and Senate sections modify the definition of financial assistance. The House, and this applies to a prevailing wage for financial assistance, the House does contain some additional language for TIF that would require prevailing wage on TIF financing. There are a couple of other technical things, and the staff have made recommendations on which language to include from the House or Senate there. Then on R34, this is a House-only provision. This modifies the definition of project. I wanted to point out that this language is included in the Labor Policy Conference Committee. It's part of the language that's included in this House-only section, but then the House has some additional language that talks about state-financed or local government-owned projects, and it would also subject those projects, put it under the definition of project and make those projects subject to prevailing wage. Then on R34, we have a same provision. This relates to modifying the definition of employer. That is currently defined as 20 or more, an employer with 20 more employees. And for purposes of review and access to personnel records, this would reduce that to an employer is one that has one or more employees. On R34, this is the provision that we just discussed moments ago that relates to establishes the use of responsible contract provision for housing projects. And so it will just be up to the Conference Committee where they want to place that. But that was what we just talked about a few minutes ago. Then on R36, we have two same sections, House Section 4, Senate Section 10. This is the provision that relates to the Commissioner of Labor and Industry conducting rulemaking with the Commissioner of Health to adopt rules lowering acceptable blood lead levels for workers. The next article is the broadband and pipeline safety article. The sections in this article create a broadband equity access and deployment program at DEED. I'll mention that some of these are House only, some are similar. There are three House only and one that is similar. So it sets up this program at DEED. It requires a safety qualified underground installers, provides investigation powers to the PUC, regulate work near pipelines, and then also repeals the last mile prevailing wage exemption for broadband projects. So the similar provision is on R39 to R41. And this is the safety qualified underground installers for telecommunications installations. The other provisions I mentioned on R36 to R39, R41 to R43 are the House only provisions for the broadband and pipeline safety. The next article is employee misclassification prohibition. This is from pages R43 to R73. This is a House only in this bill. The Senate it has not passed this bill yet. This article prohibits misclassification of employees and construction employees, increases penalties and enforcement, and creates a new multi-agency partnership on misclassification enforcement and education, and establishes a new multi-part construction independent contractor test. Again, this is House only language. The next article is the minors appearing in internet content, and this was passed actually off the Senate floor yesterday. I will not go into detail. This was passed as the language that was in House File 3488, passed yesterday, as I mentioned. And this is the article would provide regulations, compensation requirements, and enforcement provisions related to minor children appearing in internet platforms where the content generates compensation. The next article is earned sick and safe time modifications. This is a Senate-only article. It's on pages R79 to R89. And this makes various technical and policy changes related to the earned sick and safe time provisions and that were passed last year. It also authorizes rulemaking for the Department of Labor and Industry on earned sick and safe time.
And then finally, the last article is a Senate-only article for the University of Minnesota Collective Bargaining. This is on pages R90 to R94. And this is, again, Senate-only. So what this article does is it amends PELRA provisions to allow University of Minnesota employees, including student employees, to more flexibility in organizing bargaining units. So that concludes our walkthrough. And then I don't know if somebody wants to do some motions for sames and similars in that.
Thank you. But before we get to that, are there questions on the walkthrough? I don't see any. Nothing online. No one online.
So, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Chairman Nelson.
I'd like to move the same and similar provisions on pages R6 to R11, R16 to R17, R34, and R36, and take the staff recommendations for the ones that are similar. Okay. I believe that's the proper motion. Looking down at.
All right, let me get my situation in order here. And then we'll ask you to repeat that. Okay, can you repeat your motion again?
The same and similar provisions on pages R6 to R11, R16 to R17, R34, and R36. And again, take the staff recommendations on the similars where it's applicable. So that would be the combative sports section. The Bureau of Mediation Services section. The on page 3 of the walkthrough, the modifying the R34 where it modifies the definition of an employer. And then R36 was the had to do with the blood levels. Blood levels in workers.
Okay. I'm going to repeat this, and then what I'd like to do is we can have discussion, and if there's anyone from the public that wants to testify on this motion, we would invite that as well. The motion would be to adopt R6 through R11, R16 through R17, R34, R36, and then the staff recommendations. And what were the, could you refresh my memory on the staff recommendations?
Staff recommendations on the similars.
On similars. Okay. Is everyone clear on the motion? Chair Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I would ask that you call on Senator McEwen to hear her concurrence with this motion.
Senator McEwen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I do concur with the motion and support the motion as well. Thank you very much for checking in.
Thank you. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question I had to the proposer of the motion R11, are you including the Senate-only provision on the privacy of combative sports data?
I did not include that. I figured that we'd do that separately. I think what I got here is what Senator McEwen sent to me, but I believe it's just the same and not do the differences at this point.
Mr. Chairman, would there be time later to talk about that particular provision?
Sure.
Or could
would you
we
want to talk about
it
now?
Or
we can adopt
Mr. Chair,
this?
I remember we discussed this. This is a bipartisan
support for this particular provision coming from the Judiciary Committee and the Senate. We kind of lumped in combative sports data being a sport and data of participants in with the other provision, and it's something that we found not to be controversial at all.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Nelson.
Mr. Chair and Representative or Senator Limmer, I personally don't have issues with that section. It just, I figured we'd do the same in similar pieces and we could just discuss that as a separate motion, seeing as how it was a different,
that's fine.
It was a Senate-only position.
That's fine, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator McEwen.
Thank you. Chair Nelson just essentially said what I was going to say. I believe that we do have agreement on that provision. It just procedurally, we were just adopting the same and similars at this point. Thank you.
Okay. So it sounds, Senator Limmer, that there'll be some time to digest this, but it's good to hear that it sounds like there's some growing consensus around it. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for raising that, Senator Limmer. So why don't we do this? Is there anyone from the public that would like to testify on this, on Chair Nelson's motion? Anyone from the public? Okay. Committee discussion. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think this, I certainly rely on the information from our esteemed colleague here, too, in regards to the same. And because this is a large bill, I think it's appropriate to start this. But the rest of the stuff to digesting over the weekend, I think, is appropriate. So if this is something that Chair Nelson wants to do, that's perfectly fine. I'll move in with it. But I think other things, even though there may be bipartisan agreement in one body, it may not be in the other. And certainly over the weekend, I know that the chairs are going to be talking between both bodies, and they'll come back with a second level of same and similars that we can meet with next week. So thank you.
Yeah, I think procedurally, you're very accurate on that, Representative Petersburg. Okay, so we have the motion. I think I've read it. It's clear, and so on Chair Nelson's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed.
Aye.
Yeah, thanks. All opposed, the motion prevails. So thank you, Chair Nelson, for getting us started. That's some momentum building, and I hear some chuckles. We've concluded our business for today, but I did want to say that we're going to meet on Monday. And what we'll do on Monday is, I understand we have some, we're close on housing, and we'll take up some housing, same and similars, and other items. And then also on transportation, we have a number of items that were probably closer than one might think. So we'll be taking some of those items up as well. And we'll take also some general public testimony before we get too far down the road. We'd like to hear from the public. And so Senator Dibble will chair on Monday, and we'll those who want to testify, you can contact, I guess, Ms. Ethier or Mr. Will, and we'll get you on the list.
But as for, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
As for time on Monday, as we're proposing the Monday meeting, immediately flying into us for all the other conference committees and committees that are meeting, so we have to sort through a number of conflicting meeting, so we haven't quite landed on the time, but as soon as possible, we'll be sure to post that and get that communicated.
Are there any other questions or items that anyone wants to raise before we adjourn? Well, with that, happy fishing opener, happy Mother's Day, and our committee is adjourned.